Blog Talk Radio.
This is Master Griot Radio, channel 13 on your NBBTA Internet Radio dial. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time. It's time for purpose-driven words, shaping thoughts, building minds, true wealth, communities, and legacies.
If my words had wings, they'd fly to you each day. I can't do this. This is too much. What am I supposed to do? There's so much to do. I need help. I need to have something right. I need answers. Who's going to be there? I've messed up so much. I feel like I've tried everything, but now, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Just breathe. I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I can't live a whole life with half a self, with half of me in tow, saving the potential of me for some rainy day as if there isn't more to be living for. How can God work with half a woman towards her full potential? How can he pour blessings into my cup that overfloweth if my insecurities and sins have created holes that can't store it? I wrestle with principalities against my own flesh and blood, looking towards the mark of the higher calling, but that takes a whole lot of faith. And to follow where he leads takes a whole lot of dedication. And to stand in the face of my fears, or to proclaim the life of Christ, or even to love my neighbor, takes a whole lot of preparation. So half of me won't do. Giving only half my day, or half my thoughts, or half of everything I got is not only useless but unwise when God sees me wholly with his own eyes. When God in his grace sees me wholly with his own eyes. So I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I gotta get it right. My purpose is on the line. And how can I have only half the mind to do what's right, or spend less than half of the time attempting to develop myself into disciplined study or focused way of life, when it takes to committing the whole mind, the whole body as a living sacrifice? See, we want full blessings from the Lord, but we only pray half the time. And sometimes we remember to love our neighbor, but we seek God's love all the time. We go into situations and relationships with half of ourselves in tow, still hoping good things will come from them despite. And we forget that to love God with our whole heart takes a constant renewing of the mind, a constant reviewing of our lives. For many of the things we need to grow takes a committed and dedicated whole, not got from simple Bible reading or occasional fasting and praying, but our whole effort with our whole heart gives God the room to bring out the wholeness in us that he created within us long ago. So I chanted like I wanted, like it's part of my whole being, like it's significant, like it's attainable, as if my spirit desired it. I needed to present myself fully as committed to his word. I want to be a whole woman because half a woman can't quite gain wisdom in this world. So each day I pray the prayer of complete reliance on God and all his magnificence, for only he is able to bring out in me the wholeness that he created. I'm not whole on my own, but I belong to you. I'm not of myself, but of you and your divine purpose. I am not alone, but with you. I seek your guidance in my daily business. I'm not whole on my own, but pieced together by your hand, held together by your will. I am not led by neither wants, desires, or personal debates, but ever yielding to that which you lay before me. So today, as every day, I listen to your voice, walk in step with you, seek your wisdom, and lay no claim to my own life so that I may be aligned with your way. For I seek to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. God, I want to live what you made me, a whole woman. A whole woman, a whole woman. Amen.
I say. This is Master Griot Radio, and we're welcoming you to the launch of the Phoenix Woman Hour and their new program, Awake, Arise, Arise. This is an exciting new show dedicated to enlightening, empowering, and inspiring women. The Phoenix Woman will cover topics such as whole body, self-awareness, relationships, and self-esteem. You can call in right now, and the number is 646-716-7994. Again, that number is 646-716-7994. You can also catch us on the chat over here at Blog Talk. So just come to blogtalkradio.com/NBBTA and listen in live. You can also just call in to listen. And we are talking about the new show, The Phoenix Woman, Hour, Awake, Arise, Arrive. And this is Women Empowerment Month. And we just got finished listening to, we kicked off the show with Whole Woman. And that's by Rhapsody from her debut CD, Spoke Inward. I want to be a whole woman. A whole woman. A whole woman. Amen. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I'm your host this moment in time. But Kimberly of the Phoenix Woman, founder and CEO, will be your host on the Phoenix Woman Hour. I'm just here to introduce the show for right now, and I am with Master Grill Radio, and we thank you for stopping by and listening in on this Woman's Empowerment Hour. We like for you to, of course, if you like to call in, the number is 646-716-7994. Again, that number is 646-716-7994. And today we do have one special guest talking about empowered women. We have Zahara McGill, founder and artistic director of First World Theater Ensemble. She's also an actor and a director, dancer, and youth advocate. So you name it, she does it. But she is definitely a strong back woman, a mother, a teacher. And we're going to talk to her today about, you know, being awake, arising, and arriving. So everyone, please, let's speak to Zahara. Hi, Z.
Hi, Ms. Taylor. How are you today?
Great.
What would you like to talk about today? I understand that the program is about the Phoenix Woman. Rising, something that has interested me here on your radio station, and I'm very happy to hear about that. So I'm here to help any woman that might need some uplifting, some self-awareness, and self-esteem. That's what I'm here for today.
Well, tell us a little bit about you, Ms. Zahara. You know, I mean, you are today's black superwoman.
Oh, my God. That's a good one. I don't know about superwoman, Ms. Taylor, but I do know that it's important and imperative that African-American females, along with all other women across the world, begin to empower themselves and uplift themselves and understand that they count just as anyone else, and they're just as important. And I think it's very important. We have to start uplifting each other and making sure that we take care of one another because, as you know, women are always the nurturers and we take care of other people, and it's time for us to take care of ourselves.
Okay. So, you know, we just want to learn a little bit about you. So where are you from? Where are you born and raised? Where's your hometown?
Well, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I am a New Yorker. However, I do live currently in the state of Pennsylvania. I started out in the show business world. My parents were in show business, so I had no other choice but to venture out into the same field. I have been in the business for quite some time. I'm not going to say how long because that might tell my age. And we know how we women are about our age. I have worked with some of the most outstanding performers, directors, and producers in the business of the theater world, along with a wonderful, wonderful entourage of women who have empowered me and made me self-aware of who I am. My theater company is called the First World Theater Ensemble, and we are located here in the state of Pennsylvania in Upper Darby. And it basically is a theater company that truly believes in uplifting the human spirit. We believe at First World, if you do not leave the theater the same way you came in, willing to make a change within yourself and your community and your children, then we haven't done our job. And that's what we do here at First World Theater.
Okay. Well, speaking of women and generations of women, it's in, as far as showbiz, When you think about your mother, what was she in? Was she also in theater?
Yes. Well, my mother wasn't in theater. My mother was a singer. Clara Smith was my mother, who was one of the greatest jazz singers. Bessie Smith was our cousin. Chick Webb managed my mother, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, and Billie Holiday. And my mother, who was 89, of course, before she passed on, was a person of the Harlem Renaissance era, along with my father, who was an original hoofer. So Clara, after she got through with jazz, she went on and she started singing with the Clara Ward Singers.
Mm-hmm.
She sung with them for many of years, and then she became a solo artist. My father, who was an original hoofer, during that time, you know, he danced with Sam Mansan, Bilbo Jingus Robinson. The list goes on and on. If you know anything about the hoofers, they were a type of tap dancers who developed this wonderful, wonderful type of tap dance that derived from Africa, with a combination of African movement with tap, and it just took off as a phenomenon during the Harlem Renaissance period.
All right. So now, how would you say for your mother at that time as a woman in show business, what were some of the challenges she had to endure?
Ooh, very good question. My mother used to tell me stories, things about the things that women had to endure during that time, which I'm kind of lucky that I'm lucky and then I'm not so lucky. Now, let me rephrase that. We are lucky and not so lucky at the same time, because they went through things that we necessarily don't have to go through now, but we have new challenges and new things that we have to go through as current African-American females in the business. So, for an example, my mother would say if she was in the restroom, in the bathroom, taking care of her womanly business, whatever it may be, any white man or man could just walk into the bathroom without her having any say-so while she's there taking care of her business, and there was nothing she could say. They look at her, just do what you got to do, gal, and pay me no mind. There are other times they were subject to being called names, racist names and slurs and things like that, but yet they would creep into their hotel rooms and the colored hotel rooms and want to have sex with them and experience other things with the African-American female. So my mother went through these chains of these events along with people like Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald and things like that who had to deal with these issues and could not say anything. How dare you? You better not say anything or else that's your career. You would lose your career. But would go home and express these things to their husbands and their families, you know, in torment at night emotionally of what they had to go through. And I'm just glad that we don't have to go through that type of situation. But I think we're going through some other situations. It's just different, you know, with the music videos nowadays, girls, you know, with the shorts up to the tails and always stripping down. It's like always selling sex, that it's like saying that a black female is not worthy of anything else unless she reveals her body. It seems like to be a constant, ongoing thing for us in the business.
Okay. Are there any other current challenges you feel we have as, you know, females in theater? Or any special, you know, challenges as, you know, women in theater? Do you feel that, you know, challenges that a woman may have to endure that a man may not?
Oh, of course, of course. Because it's a male-dominant world, particularly in the theater world, you don't see as many female directors. You have a lot of female writers that are starting to emerge now, particularly African-American females. They're really starting to emerge. At one time, there wasn't many of us, but they're really starting to emerge now. However, they are still meeting the challenges of your work is not good enough, or go back and keep revising, and you revise it 300 times, and it's still not good enough. Or also including with the funding. The funding doesn't come through as quickly for us as it does for our white counterpart or any other counterpart because of who we are. You know, it's still a political game, and it's always still about us having to have to be better in order to get what we need to get. But I think that, you know, we have seen the light, and we're starting to do that because now there's a lot of African female writers that are coming out of the closets and the corners and the nooks and crannies with these wonderful pieces. You know, getting them mounted is another challenge for us. as African American female writers, because who wants to hear a black woman's voice? Is it, all you're going to do is whine and cry and yada, 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 constantly like you always do. But no, we have a lot more to say. We have a lot of things to say on the political situations, the economical situation, the educational situation, the healthcare situation. So we have a lot to say, and it's just the fact that we have it on page. It's on paper. Now it's us trying to really push and get it from the page to the stage. And we are still facing those challenges. Those doors are semi-open, but they haven't opened completely for us.
Yeah. I think a lot of times as black women, we get pegged as being male bashers.
Yes, we do. Constantly,
you know.
Yeah. They're under the impression of a black woman has written a play. Oh, my God, here she go. She's going to bash a male. It's all about bashing the male. When it's not about bashing the male, it's actually about self-discovery, self-esteem, uplifting, finding out who you are and where you are in life and where you plan on going. So in order to get to the future, you have to go back to the past to go through the healing process. You know, sometimes there are some females, I have to agree, that get a little edgy out there and want to just start bashing males on, you know, on a consistent basis. You know, and we're not into that at first world. We're not into bashing anyone. We're just into making sure that the message is sent out there and that we uplift, we give you self-esteem, we give you pride, we give you dignity, and most important, we want to help you bring about a change.
Okay. Well, you know, got us on to First World. So before we quite go into First World, because we definitely want to hear more about the company and its history, but using as an actor, director now, what are you doing currently? Aren't you, you are in a classic play right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm currently starring in Fences, written by August Wilson, and I'm playing the character Rose. This is currently running at the Wilmington Drama League in Wilmington, Delaware. It has been running, open up March 12th, and it runs until March 27th. And I am so honored, Ms. Taylor, to be playing and acting in August Wilson's play. He was just phenomenal. I had wrote something on my Facebook page the other day saying, August Wilson, you were a beast, and we love you for it. He has written a well-written piece, Fences, and the female character is just wonderful. I say in this place, August Wilson, he got it. He got it about the female and what she was feeling and what she was going through in this particular piece.
Yes. I had the pleasure of seeing it for the first time yesterday. I went to see it, and I have to admit, you know, a good play starts with the writing.
Yes.
This was such a well-written play, and conversation flowed, very much in touch with the, you know, the human spirit and the situations for the male. And surprisingly, because at first I really thought, okay, we're going to have a one-dimensional female. And that's basically what I thought, you know, for the first half of the play. I said, this is, like, totally written by a man, all about the men.
Right.
And that's really what I thought.
Right.
And then when the change came, and at the depths, I mean, you're so right, he really caught the true spirit and true feeling. And at the same time, he reflected a lot of the issues that men go through that sometimes maybe women don't always understand.
Right.
You know, their different struggle, and it presented so well in such just like a flow of conversation and reflective of the era. It was just really a great play, and the cast was wonderful, and of course, you stole the show.
No.
Yes, you did. At the end, you thought the lead male was going to get the standing ovation. It wound up being you.
Well, that's thanks to August Wilson. Thank you, August. Thank you, my ancestor. I love you for it.
I had to let the audience know. She talking about August Wilson's a beast. She's a beast on the stage. But if anyone hasn't experienced Fences, it's like really necessary that you do.
It is, yes.
That you experience Fences, that you, it's one, it's a classic, and that's something we've been talking about, just our classic black plays that many people just are not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And And they tell many different stories. I think people get locked into thinking everything is going to be a raisin in the sun, you know, one way, or something about slavery.
Right.
And they don't think we have all different types of stories to tell, and why they are told from our voice and have our cultural flair, like I said about fences. Because it, you know, took place in a certain place and time, but from a certain people.
Yeah, it took place from the year of 1957 to 1965 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so therefore, you know, of course racism had to be reflected.
Right.
Of course different things had to be reflected, because it wouldn't be true to the story. You're not going to have a black man and a black family be in America not going through certain things.
Right. Right.
But the overall play, as far as what it was about, as far as what you walk away with and understand, it didn't matter if you were white, black, or purple.
Right.
You understood those characters and those, you know, the things that that man went through.
Right.
You know, as far as his personal growth and development, with struggles that and issues that a lot of men go through. You see it all the time.
Correct.
So whether they're in a Brooks Brothers three-piece suit on Wall Street, or they're a working Joe back in 1957, a black working Joe, it didn't matter. You know, those experiences were the same, as well as the woman, and everybody related.
Right.
So, and this is really the thing we need to understand, that when it comes down to telling stories, and when it comes down to it, we're all human. And I know that I work for us to present media that reflects our humanity, but the biggest person I want to reflect and to understand our humanity is our own people.
Correct.
I think we don't truly believe in our own humanity.
Right.
And so we get stuck. But tell us about First World. What are some things that First World has done? I mean, we talk about, we have a black theater that's founded by a woman.
Yes.
So tell us what this woman has done with her theater and her mark on the world.
Well, with the help of others, along with First World, because, you know, it's founded by me. I'm the founder and the producer and artistic director. But, of course, we can't do it. I can't do it alone. I have wonderful, wonderful people that works along with us. We have Richard Lamont Pierce, who's our resident writer, who has written several wonderful pieces. As a matter of fact, one of them warranted me a Barrymore nomination, Sojourner, about the pioneer Sojourner Truth, which was a wonderful piece. And he's just, the list just goes on with Richard Lamont Pierce. Richard is an ex-teacher, 20 years historian, particularly a person who is really into our culture and understands our culture, and really is a type of man who writes particularly for African-American women. I don't know how he did it. I think I told him, I said, Richard, you must have been a woman in another life, because he truly understands us as a people, and I'm just shocked behind that. And then, of course, Ms. Taylor, you are our marketing director. We have a fierce, you have come along to help us along with our marketing and have done some wonderful things to help First World name get out there. Between New York and Philadelphia, you know, just the name period, you know, people go, First World, oh, wow, yeah, we want to work for them. So, you know, thanks to kudos to people like that, you know, we wouldn't be where we are now. We've produced 12 full-length plays with several world premieres. Of course, we've won a Barrymore nomination. We've received a citation from the City of Philadelphia as being one of the first and the best theater, African-American theaters company. We have also been branded and labeled, which we are very proud of, that we do not do fluff theater. We have been labeled to be a theater company that incites the spirit, which is a wonderful statement from a critic in the City of Philadelphia. As a matter of fact, ran into some people, I think about last week, who have been saying, where is First World? I said, well, because we don't have a building, we can't do as many plays, because, you know, it's very difficult to do these plays if you don't have some solid place to do them, because, you know, the funding has been cut short, you know, financially you just don't have the money to do it. But it was such a wonderful thing to see that people were still interested in First World, and the comment was, this is the type of theater that we want people to see. And it's so nice to hear that you know, they're saying that everyone else is doing fluff theater, doing musicals, you know, Footloose and all those wonderful shows that are very valid. First World is doing things like Twilight Time, which is about health care, and Before It Hits Home, which is about the AIDS epidemic, and Night Mother, which is about suicide, and the list goes on and on. We are a social issue-driven theater company, and those are the type of plays that we do, and we're very proud of them here at First World.
That's great. Well, what we're going to do, we're going to take a break, and you're going to hear some of your babies. And then when we come back, because we're going to hear a male perspective, all my music hasn't uploaded. But then we're going to come back and talk about some of the plays that we've done that have been written by women. And we can, you know, talk about those plays and those contents, and we can close out on that. So right now we're getting ready to go listen to Peace Be Still. It's by Brothers Keepers. And think about this, a single married father alone.
Now, y'all, y'all mean giving them a hand as they come. Come on, Brothers Keepers.
Sometimes we move too much.
My new life now deferred. I contemplate the reversal. Standing stifled and bewildered, I contemplated within myself. I bickered within myself. I'm tortured within myself. Me now being the recipient of my own past iniquity, karma. Here I stand in quicksand, stifled and bewildered, in conflict with myself, hating myself, despising the current tense, no longer cunning and criminal-minded. I now scrap at the bottom of the barrel, emotionally, financially, even spiritually. Upon receiving the title of father, a cycle of 360 degrees involuntarily took place within me. No more pimping, no more swinging, limited drinking, limited hanging. Work, baby, and home is all that I know. Purposing in my heart to do good, but other than my baby, no good will come to me. A single married father, alone, bickering within myself, doubting myself, accepting the fact that my present hideous life was only repercussions of my former life. No good will ever come from a cat like me, therefore no good will ever happen to a cat like me. With my path wide open, I began to trust that I was just cursed, married but alone and hurt. With adultery I flirt, but due to my baby I won't. Wondering why women who don't even know me love me, and my wife who don't. A married single father, alone, contemplating a reversal. Standing in the middle of the street with a flat tire, no spare, no cell phone. Too many miles from home, walking to the gas station to use the payphone to call home. Once again, wifey has rejected me, so back on my feet I roam. Feet being the hot tar, back to my stifled car, my brain far from reality. Instead of pondering ways to make her leave, I'm wondering how I can make her love me. Made to believe that I was deserving of this misery. So said she. I allowed her to transfer her negative energy onto me. Now she got me. Bickering within myself. Well, maybe if I hadn't cheated on Tamika, Chandra, Biggie, Cassandra, Teresa, and them back in 94. Or maybe if I hadn't been a pimp to all those women whores. Or maybe if I hadn't done all that dirt from 88 to 94. Instead of placing blame where it needed to be, I'm hating me. Punishing myself for past evil deeds. Four cars pulled over with people who don't even know me. Through strangers, the Creator showed me he's got me. Not at all an implication that evil deeds go unpunished. For the evil that we do is returned in tenfold. But as long as I purpose in my heart to do right, I guess I'm all right. No longer stifled, but still. Seeking God in the mirror, and God was revealed. Allowing life's lessons to teach me to love me. Teaching me to forgive me. I may be healed. meeting God in the mirror, and God was revealed. No longer stifled, but still. Oh, but I know how to be still, I say. We need to learn that we cannot keep on getting stuck in these no-win positions. We just got to let the sad song play on. Now we're going to give you a B selection.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We just got finished listening to Peace Be Still by Brothers Keepers, talking about a married single father alone. This is Master Griot Radio, and I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, your host for this moment in time. This is the Phoenix Woman Hour. Awake, arise, arrive. And our special guest today is Zuhar McGill, founder and artistic director of First World Theater Company. She's an actor and director and teacher. And we've been just talking about women in the business, in the entertainment business, women in theater, about the challenges, the triumphs, and we've been just talking about her theater company, First World Theater. She gave us a little background. And now Ms. Zuhar is going to share with us about plays that First World's done that have been written by women playwrights. And tell us about the plays. And were all the plays just about women, or did they just happen to be great stories written by women?
Well, first of all, they just happen to be great stories written by women. I must say that, because all of these plays were truly great plays written by African-American women, except for one. And that just goes to show you, a story doesn't necessarily have to come from an African-American woman. It can come from any woman, because as women, we do have a common bond, and that common bond is being of the female species, the things that we have to go through as females in this male-dominant world.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter if you're Black, Asian, Latino, you name it, we're going through it.
Yeah.
We have a common ground. one of the plays that we did was entitled Before His Home, was written by a sister named Cheryl C. West. And the piece was about the epidemic of the AIDS virus that really overtook us in the early 80s. And this piece does take place like in the late 80s, early 90s, but it is so relevant for today, because the epidemic is really way out of control. As you know, African-American women are the people with the highest rate of AIDS, HIV virus and AIDS, full-blown AIDS. We're dying at the highest rate now. So Cheryl West kind of hit it on the nose when she brought it out in the 80s. It's just basically a story about a family who have a son who's living a double life, involved sexually with a man and a woman, and then he comes home to announce that he is dying from full-blown AIDS. However, it's a crazy piece of work, because throughout the play, you hear the father constantly coming down on a young man because he's a jazz musician. He doesn't like the idea that he's out there leading this crazy life. He doesn't know what he's going to get himself into. He needs to get a decent job, and the list goes on. But meanwhile, the mother is constantly saying, no, let the child lead his own life. He has the right to do what he needs. So she's a very nurturing woman, caring, loves her family. Meanwhile, they have another son who is just doing the right thing. They're very proud of him because it's two sons, and they're very happy with what the other son is doing. And then what happens is during the second act, the son comes home to announce that he has full-blown AIDS and that he's dying. And Cheryl C. West turns that story around like I don't know what, because the mother becomes enraged. She becomes upset. She's like, how dare you bring this into my house? To the point where the mother actually left the home and was almost driven to the edge of insanity, that her child, something that she has birthed and brought into the world, how dare he come and come in with something of this disease. She gets to the point where she doesn't even want the child to touch her. So it warrants such a rouse out of the community here in Philadelphia, and particularly the critics of Philadelphia, stating that it was a wonderful piece, but how could Cheryl C. West take a mother, women who are supposed to be nurturing women, people who have, you know, nurtured children, bring them into the world and raise them and just supposed to be a loving and kind human being. How dare she become this human being who says, oh, no, I can't have this in my house. Are you crazy? But what the critic forgot was that women have feelings.
Mm-hmm.
We have feelings. We're angry sometimes. We're happy sometimes. We're sad sometimes. And the critic not understanding, as a female, the things that we've gone through in life, the hardship, sometimes things just take a toll. And at that point, that mother was at the point where she just didn't
mm-hmm.
know how to handle it, so she reacted differently. And we all are human beings, and the critic has to understand that the mother just reacted differently. Who's to say that a mother can't turn on her child? You have nowadays, you have women abusing their children, mothers
mm-hmm.
who are killing their children. You know? So who's to say that someone so nurturing can't turn on a child? Yes, it can happen.
Yeah.
Saying that it's unfortunate, but it can happen. So that piece was just phenomenal.
Yeah, we have one particular critic here in Philly.
Ooh.
Well, he's not no longer working.
Right,
but
yeah.
We
won't mention the name.
Yeah, but he had a real issue about, and that just goes to talk about, you know, it just showed in his critique that he had a singular view of women. And when women were portrayed outside of what he defined a woman should be, he attacked the writer who did that.
Correct. He did. He didn't attack the acting or anything. He loved that, but he attacked the writing.
Mm-hmm. Because of the how dare they put a woman in something that's not conventional as far as what he deemed his viewpoint of women.
True.
He, you know, he did that on a consistent.
Yes, he did. Other writers, we've done work with Dr. Kamika Williams-Witherspoon. We did a piece called Survivor Strategies, which was based on a true story of an African-American woman here in the city of Philadelphia, actually chained her daughter to a radiator to keep her from going out to using crack cocaine. The mother had tried several methods as far as getting her into rehab, and, you know, the list goes on. You know what mothers do to protect their children. You know, it's like a lion protecting her baby cubs, and it didn't work. So finally the mother decided just to chain her to a radiator to keep her from going out using crack. And, you know, the ending of the story was no happy-go-lucky story. It was a one-day-at-a-time ending, like, okay,
mm-hmm.
just for today, since my mother has trust me, you know, at the end it gives it, like, a really nice twist. You know, the mother leaves and leaves a pocketbook. It happened to leave the key in the house, you know. And, you know, the girl at the end has the option, do I take this key and leave and lock the door and don't come back, or do I stay here and try and deal with this issue that my mother's trying to save me from, this epidemic just saved my life. So it was a really good story.
Yeah.
Dr. Kamika Williams-Witherspoon, she's just a fabulous writer. You know, she's a professor at Temple University, and she's just fierce.
And, but remember what she had to go through. We were the first one to mount it, and again, this was a play written back in the 80s. They said
right.
It was too raw for the stage.
That is correct. It had never, ever been produced by a professional theater company or on stage, and it went through several readings. As a matter of fact,
it won the Pew
Charitable Trust Award.
$50,000
grant. It won, but still no one would touch it because it was too raw, and she was happy that we touched it, and it was worthy of touching.
Mm-hmm.
We did another piece by, of course, our girl J.E. Franklin, Black Girls, which is what we consider a classic. That's something that was done by the Negro Ensemble Company. It's a story about a young woman who's living in this environment of dysfunctional family, who's just trying to make it out to become this wonderful ballet dancer. And the family just, particularly the mother, just don't believe that she's ever going to make it. But the Black girl has the strength of a Black girl. And she's determined to do what she needs to do in order to get out of that environment. The other one we did was a woman by name Jamie J. Brunson, who's a phenomenal playwright here. We did a reading of a piece called All Over.
Mm-hmm.
That went over so well. We have wonderful actors such as Brian Anthony Wilson, and the list goes on, Mel Donaldson. And we did, the piece is about what happens if a father and a son ends up in purgatory
mm-hmm,
together
mm-hmm.
after the father has bestowed upon the son all these hardships in life. And what would happen if they just happen to end up meeting each other in hell, and how that relationship will develop in the midst of purgatory. So that's a really good piece, too. The other piece we did, we were very proud of that. We did the first African-American premiere of Night Mother. by Marsha Norman.
And the Philadelphia Premiere.
And the Philadelphia Premiere, who Marsha Norman is not of African descent. She's of Caucasian descent. And we were just so proud to do that. As a matter of fact, one critic who came to saw it gave us kudos for even attempting to do such a really hard piece about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And when he saw it, he said he can see why it's not done often because of the subject matter. Mind you, each time that we've done any of these plays, we always had talkback sessions. First of all, we never do anything like these sort of plays without a talkback session. So we had people from the suicide prevention agencies there. When we did Night Mother, people from Bobashi for AIDS, Survivor Strategy, we had people who were like counselors, people who were actually crack addicts, and things like that. So we always make sure that the assistant, that the help that you might
mm-hmm.
be looking for is always there for you.
Yeah.
And last but not least, we have, I was a student of Dr. Barbara Ann Teer, who was the founder of the National Black Theater National Black Theater Home in New York City, world-renowned theater company all over the world. Of course, you know, Dr. Teer passed along last year to our ancestors, who was a wonderful woman and pioneer in believing that females had power, and that's just the way God made us, and nobody can take it from us, and we're going to do what we have to do as females to get where we need to get to. We took a play, we took two of our plays there. We took a piece there called From Ancient to Hip Hop, The African Continuum, which went over very well there. And then we took another piece, Sojourner. We took it there for maybe like a weekend, but then it ended up wanting us to come back and do a full run of Sojourner. And it was all to Dr. Teer, who came in, and I was her student, and she came in. She never sat to watch Sojourner throughout the whole piece. And I said to her, Dr. Teer, you're not sitting here to watch Sojourner throughout the whole piece. She looked at me, she said, for what? You're a woman. You know what you're doing. I don't have to worry about that. I know it's going to be powerful. So it's just wonderful to hear that coming from someone who was so powerful, who was in touch with our ancestors, who truly believe in that the spirit of our ancestors was in all of us, particularly females, and we have to continue in carrying that legacy of all the female ancestors who came before us and passed on and went through the trials and tribulations. And we here at First World must continue that legacy.
Okay. Well, this has been some great, interesting history. We've learned a lot about women, about theater. I don't know how many of our audience members knew these things about theater, these classic people. You named some wonderful African-American women playwrights, and Marsha Norman, who's just a great playwright. And so a lot of information. And we thank you for sharing with us the horror.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
thank
yes.
you. It's a pleasure being here with you today.
Yes.
I would like to give out our website.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, if anyone wants to get in touch with us, they can get in touch with us at firstworldtheater.biz, and that's theater with an R-E. Or they can reach us at area code 484-461-8748.
Okay. Again, their website is firstworldtheatre.biz. That's firstworldtheatre.biz. Or you can call
at 484-461-8748 to find out about our upcoming season.
Yeah, so you can check us out online if you'd like us to come to your town, because we know this is global. We do travel. We have a whole array of plays, not just what you may see in our upcoming season, but we have we produced over 13 plays. Plus, we've done readings for about another at least 12 to 16 plays. And we've produced two gospel musicals. So,
Those are Pink Lake Ushers and Hats on a Vine.
Yes. So.
Phenomenal.
So we have some great work, some diverse work. So we definitely do travel. And if you want to book a program here, we have great programs. We can make it a fundraiser if you need to just... We'll show you how to use the play to help market whatever you're doing. If you're trying to raise funds, raise attention to a cause, just, I mean, like, we're just here to support, and we believe in collaboratives that lift each other up.
Yes, we truly believe in the awake, arise, and arrive.
All right, so that's what we're doing here. This has been the Phoenix Woman Hour. You can tune in again next week, same time. This is Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and stay wonderful.